Welcome to Hawthorne Valley's podcast, Roots to Renewal. We're happy you joined us for episode 7 of season 2. In this episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Aisha Hassan and Lucas Paul Tanavichis, the founders of Cycle to Farms, an advocacy project with the goal of documenting regenerative agriculture practices in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa by cycling from farm to farm. They began their cycling journey in the Netherlands, ultimately visiting over 20 farms in 15 countries. The couple's initial goal was to explore regenerative agriculture and learn its true meaning from farmers themselves. They found that it went beyond practices and embraced community, culture, and social well-being. Let's join Hawthorne Valley's Executive Director, Martin Ping, as he chats with these inspiring young people.
Aisha and Lucas, it's really wonderful to reconnect and have you as guests on our podcast. This is honoring Hawthorne Valley's 50 years of agriculture, education, and art in the Hudson Valley here. And I had the pleasure of meeting the two of you at SACEM in November of last year and have been following your journey via your website and am really interested to learn more firsthand on how things are going and to share your story with our listeners on the podcast. So thank you for taking time. And first of all, where are you right now?
Oh, my name is Aisha Hassan.
Lucas Paltanavichos.
Thank you, Martin, for inviting us. We are currently in Tanzania, Mwanza, near the Lake Victoria. And we just arrived 2 days ago. So we still have to explore the town.
I'd like to just begin with asking you, what inspired you to make this journey in the first place? Did you have like a working hypothesis, or what was your inspiration?
So Cycle to Farm started actually when we first met each other back in 2019. Lucas and I were discussing the kind of impact we would like to make with our future work. So we wanted to take our lives a bit more serious and into our hands and make the right kind of impact. And for us, that meant in the agricultural sector. That's a sector that is close to our hearts and that we have been delving into during our studies. And on a more personal level, I got vested into the topic of sustainable agriculture because I was interested in solving issues regarding food security. From a young age, I was always told about problems of food insecurity in Somalia, my country of origin. So I felt the urge to delve deeper into this topic and to find solutions for this problem.
On my side, I come from a family that all work in conventional agriculture. So after being in that kind of environment, I also follow those steps. I did my bachelor studies in agriculture technology. Then I worked for Skandagra, which is a Scandinavian agriculture cooperative, as an agronomist and then as a fertilizer product manager. And during that time, I learned that we were not really contributing to the greater good. We were really focusing how to make more cash from the farmers. And somehow it didn't feel right to me. So I think transitioning to do the studies at Wageningen in organic agriculture, bio-based sciences, eventually out of our own interest and background, we decided to set up Cycle to Farms, to cycle from farm to farm and to highlight this farmer stories. We always wanted to cycle long distance, and now we ended up cycling in Europe, Middle East, and Africa. It led us to partner with Rainforest Alliance, write articles for John Deere, make educational videos for our university, Wageningen University. And most important, that we met a lot of great and inspiring farmers that I think they're the change makers. They're the true inspiration. And I think that's the most inspiration that we received during this journey.
Lucas, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Lithuania, in a kind of small, tiny village, not too far, like 50 kilometers from the border with Poland. So now with the ongoing war with Ukraine, that kind of part, it's Poland, Kaliningrad, and Belarus. It's all nearby. So there's this called Suwalki Corridor, which now there's this NATO summit in Vilnius. So everybody's kind of concerned about that path. So yeah, so that's my regional background. Lithuania is very focused on agricultural kind of grains export and rapeseed oil, oilseed rape, how do you call it, canola oil.
You met at university, is that correct?
Yes, Wageningen University. That's where we both studied and graduated last year. So 3 months before our journey started.
Yeah, and actually we cycled from Wageningen. So we just left from the university as a place of inspiration, to be honest.
Hmm. Did you know from the very start that you were going to be going from Europe into Africa?
So actually the initial plan was to go to Tanzania and visit a farm here that we were very interested in. But somehow it felt like we would skip a lot of in-between farms and interesting transitions. And we thought, why not combine these two ideas of cycling and visiting farms at the same time? Because that's a great way to see changes in not only culture, but also landscape changes. And that's obviously also very important for agriculture. So that's how we came to this decision.
And also in our background, we had quite a few friends who were cycling long distance. One friend was cycling, our Indian friend, he was cycling all across Europe. Another friend cycled to Spain, and everybody had this idea to cycle even further. So our friend, he wanted to cycle back home to India. Another friend wanted to cycle to Iran. So I think the Netherlands was kind of a good spot for it. All these cycling ideas for the long distance. And I think COVID really kicked off because we were cycling a bit long distances with our friends, and also with Asia, we cycled to Belgium, to Switzerland. So we kind of did this a little bit of preparation beforehand to see if that's really a thing for us.
How many farms have you visited, if you've kept count?
Yeah, I think we lost count, but it's around 15 countries. Yeah. And over 20 farms, more or less, something in this
direction.
Yeah, it's always changing. Yeah, it's not always an easy task to find a regenerative farm. It's not per se that they always use that term. It's more like, in particular, in the Balkan region, it was quite difficult for us to find some farms over there. While in Africa, it's not always that they call themselves regenerative, but their practices are inherently regenerative according to our understanding. And before you come to the farm, you don't really know what to expect. So you only get to know what is it all about after staying at least a week or even two. We tried to stay for a bit longer just to understand what is it all about.
Let's just stay with this term, regenerative agriculture. It's a term that is used quite often. I think there are institutions here in the U.S. that are trying to put some definition and standards around it so that maybe it has meaning that is understood by and accepted by many. What would you say is your understanding or definition of regenerative ag, and how has it evolved while you've been on this journey?
So I think at the very start of our journey, we decided to focus on regenerative agriculture because we struggled to understand what does it actually mean. Because when you read these policy papers or presentations, it's a lot of vocabulary which is changing over time, and it's not very clear what does it mean. So we thought, why not ask the farmers, what does regenerative agriculture mean to you? And not to ask, from the corporation's definition or from a governmental policy. Yeah. So what do you think, Aisha? How did your understanding change over time, over visiting over this past year?
Yeah, well, indeed, we were researching a lot about regenerative agriculture before we even started, because making a selection of farms to visit, you kind of have to know what it means. And while searching on the web, we found a lot of criterias, but mainly focused on practices, for example, crop rotation, minimum or zero tillage, introducing all kinds of different crops and species, integrating food forests, using cover crops, harvesting water, you name it, composting, obviously very important, and not using any chemical pesticides and fertilizers. So these were like common criteria that we would see all the time. But while we were visiting the farms, we really saw that they were doing way more than that. They were practicing initiatives that were focused on social well-being of the people and the community building. So almost every farm had that we visited was stressing the importance of involving the community in their efforts and regenerating the land and creating a healthy environment for all living beings. And that's like a shared responsibility. One person cannot do it alone, rather a collective of effort that involves the communities in all kind of ways. So that was really, really special for us to see that.
And I think in my case, I really enjoyed this, the quote that one of the farmers in Austria said, Alfred Grund, he said, we don't only grow food, soil, but we also grow people. I think that's sometimes too often neglected part in those definitions.
And that was a good summary, I think, of what we have seen so far.
It is agriculture after all. And so it's very nice to hear that it's living very strongly in the farms and with the farmers who you've visited so far. It's really inspiring. How about any insights that you're gaining around the whole question of food security related to this?
Yeah, that's a very good question. For example, in Kenya, we visited a farm that the community was dealing with a lot of food insecurity. So it was a pastoralist community of around 100 people in that village. And they were mainly raising cattle and livestock, and they had almost no knowledge about farming at all. So we visited the initiative. It was a permaculture center in Lake Pia, and they were supporting this farm, community to start farming and in that way get their food and harvest their food themselves. So instead of going 1.5 hour by bus and sometimes even once to the shop where they are not even sure if they will find the food that they're searching for, to create a system where people are independent. That's what regenerative agriculture also focuses on, and that people know where their food is coming from. And in that way, you also tackle the problems regarding food security.
An interesting picture there, almost to think about the food system coming full cycle back to a more subsistence farming, I guess, is one term that people might have used, that we've moved into commodification of food and away from self-reliance and self-determination for many communities around the globe. It seems like what I'm hearing you say is that people are relearning what maybe was an experience in the past, which is now coming forward.
You know, I think my personal experience, I think most of the things that I've learned about agriculture were not from my studies at universities, but was from my grandmother's garden that was right next to her house. So the vegetables, you know, the practices and the insects around and different species, most of my understanding comes from that moment. But what we have right now in that plot of land is just, you know, plain grass. And there is a robot kind of mowing that grass. And we pushed ourselves into this direction to understand a little bit more about the agriculture just by visiting farms and learning by doing things, right? Learning in practice. It's not happening only to us, right? So it's happening in all parts of the world, from students at universities, from communities in rural Kenya.
Well, you mentioned farmers that you're meeting in Africa weren't necessarily referring to their practices as regenerative. It calls to mind another issue that comes up, at least in this country and probably elsewhere, that we come up with terms as if we're inventing something new that is actually oftentimes based in practices and indigenous wisdom that has preceded us for eons of time. And we're not always giving credit to that. There were people who were living in a right and balanced relationship with the earth and with their place and able to provision themselves in a way that was not causing violence or harm to the earth or to future generations. They didn't have to call it regenerative. They didn't have to come up with, you know, any kind of terminology. It was just agriculture or just growing food. So I'm just curious, like, what you see as far as these older practices that maybe have survived in practice for many generations.
What we often see is that people are, for example, diversifying their income. That's like the main goal for them. And when it comes to farming, that also means that they have to crop all they have to grow all kind of crops. So in that sense, it was diversifying economically, but also they know, for example, that if they diversify, it will be also healthy for the soil. And especially in the drier regions of Africa, they know very well how to harvest water and be very smart with this, because they can simply not afford it. They can't afford inputs. They cannot afford, you know, pesticides and fertilizers at the moment. So a lot of them, a lot of the farms, they have learned it from their ancestors how to farm, and that worked perfectly well for them. They would provide for their families and sometimes for the market, but they would always do it in a community so they could sell their products on a bigger market, for example. And yeah, that was really beautiful to see. And actually, almost every time we would stop, we would see a farmer, we would have a chat with them and stay there and learn more about what these traditional methods are and practices are.
One of the examples that comes into my mind was a community farm in Uganda. Yeah, it's around 400 community members. Everybody has around 5 to 6 acres of land. They kind of all live together in all that vast area, and everybody is kind of doing their own thing, but creating the nice environment that it's kind of nice to be for them. So for example, when you go into that field, it's sometimes it feels like it's a food forest, but it's also corn, and there's beans, and there's matoke, and there's, matoke is a plantain, cassava, sugar cane, beans, potatoes, the mangoes, and just such a wide variety of foods. So when you ask them, how would you call it, you know, this type of farming, they just would say that this is just natural way of farming, and this is how we do. And we just know that, you know, if you plant corn, you will get some money for it. And if you plant plantain, you will have food for yourself. It was just a natural way of living.
Every farm that we visited had like a different learning aspect. So we started in the Netherlands 1 year and 3 months ago, and we the first visit was a food forest in the Netherlands. He is a pioneer in regenerative agriculture in the Netherlands, and what we learned there is that you can have a wide diversity of species in a small plot of land. It was only 2.5 hectares, but he was growing over 450 different species.
Edible.
So edible species also, yeah. So it was really, really interesting to start off that way. And every time we would learn something else. So then the next meeting, we also in a farm in the Netherlands, and they were inspired by this farmer, but they were doing it completely different, and they had more the focus of making it holistic and also growing, for example, wheat. The quote that he mentioned was, for example, people care and fair share, right? So it's, of course, you care for the people and you want to produce healthy food, but you also need to earn something. And that's also important. And that's also a question that is often asked. Is it scalable? Is it profitable? And these kind of things. And we have definitely seen that that's all possible. Sekem was a great example as well of how large scale you can be as a regenerative farm, right? And do biodynamic practices at the same time and have this holistic approach where they focus on education, they focus on having their own industries, they focus on unity, while producing healthy food for a larger market. So I think that was a wow moment for us, because it was the first time we saw it in such a big scale. We felt very connected, and we thought this can be done in different parts of the world.
The cultural aspect, the educational aspect, and the industrial aspect, it's really impressive. And when I was very curious recently to check their impact report. So they have this very nice framework where they cover all those aspects, and they measure, kind of put a measure, a scale for themselves, where they are and where they would like to be. And I think I really have a lot of respect, and it gives a lot of inspiration that kind of big ambitious things can be achieved as well. So
what's next for you as far as you're now gone how many kilometers so far?
So far we covered over 7,000 kilometers, somewhere close to 8,000. So we finally reached our final destination, Tanzania. And this question, what's next, been following us for the past year. So we had a lot of good time brainstorming and dreaming which direction should we go and should head. And I think at the moment we will take a little pause. We'll come back home. We still need to process many findings and to finalize some of the videos that we are working to make a documentary in which we will highlight the wonderful farmers and stories that they have to tell.
And people can follow your journey and watch some of the videos that you shot and see some of the farms on your website, which is cycletofarms.com.
Initially, we were making a small video, short videos. However, when we were in Jordan, we met a filmmaker and she suggested, hey, you should make a documentary. So now we are not making the short videos, but we still do publish blog posts or interviews or even a podcast like that. So I think there's quite some content for anyone who wants to explore more. And indeed, cycletofarms.com, it's correct. You're also on Instagram, cycletofarms, just for people who are keen to see a little bit more of a daily life and daily struggle. And we are also very welcoming, and we really do find a lot of joy when people send us a message. It's always leads to many great discussions. And there's a lot of people who want to cycle. Somebody wants to learn more about regenerative agriculture. It's always a bit of everything. So, yeah. But in the end, I think with this project, we are trying to encourage people to do the brave, the something brave that they always wanted to do, but they never had the courage to do so. So I think it's not about the cycling, but it's more doing what you always been dreaming about. Yeah.
As Aisha and Lucas pause to process their experiences and finalize a documentary highlighting the stories of the inspiring farmers they've met, you can follow their journey on their website, cycletofarms.com, and on Instagram. They hope to inspire others to pursue their dreams and make positive changes in their lives. Thanks for listening to Hawthorne Valley's Roots to Renewal podcast. We are an association comprised of a variety of interconnected initiatives that work collectively to meet our mission. You can learn more about our work by visiting our website at hawthornevalley.org. Hawthorne Valley is a registered 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we rely on the generosity of people like you to make our work a reality. Please consider making a donation to support us today. If you'd like to help us in other ways, please help spread the word about this podcast by sharing it with your friends and leaving us a rating and review. Our heartfelt thanks to Grammy Award-winning artist Aaron Dessner for providing our soundtrack, and to Aaron Pink for his editing expertise.